Hello and welcome to the Truth Be Told podcast. I'm Sheddy.
I'm Shabs.
And it's been quite a long time since we've recorded a podcast.
I haven't been here for ages. It feels weird.
I think the last time Shabs recorded a podcast, if you remember correctly, was two episodes at least ago when she was on holiday enjoying life.
Just before I was on holiday.
Well, just before the, yeah. And then the pandemic hit.
And then I got stuck. I got stranded for a couple of weeks.
No, I think you managed to get back quite quickly though, really, considering.
A few weeks later on an emergency flight, which costs so much money.
That's a problem though, wasn't it? It went a bit mad out there. I think a lot of airlines decided to pretend that their flights were not running. And then for the same flights that they cancelled, they just doubled up the prices and pretended that they were emergency flights. So it's just really bad, isn't it?
Yep. After that, we've been fairly busy as well. So we haven't really had time to record a podcast, which is weird.
I know. We wanted to. Obviously, we aim to get it done within the month, and hopefully going forward, it will continue. But it's been absolute manic. That's the word to describe it, really, isn't it?
Yeah, which is weird because everybody else has been off and relaxing. And we've been very, very busy.
Yeah, I know. So I think it's... do you think we should be ready to move on to the episode for today?
Yeah.
It's well worth it, isn't it?
I like it. I like my mysterious ones.
And this is the first I'm going to hear of it. So I'll be like the listener here. And it'll be interesting to hear this one. So this is episode 18. And it's the story of Dorothy Jane Scott.
Dorothy Jane Scott was born in California on April 23rd, 1948. In 1976, Dorothy gave birth to a son, Sean. Sean's father was not in the picture for long after he was born and lived nearly 2,000 miles away in Missouri. Dorothy and Sean lived about 20 minutes from Anaheim in Stanton, California, with Dorothy's aunt. Whilst being close to her family, Dorothy was very self-reliant. She worked backroom secretary jobs at two jointly owned stores in Anaheim, Swinger's Psych Shop, which was owned by her father Jacob, and Custom John's Head Shop. Dorothy's parents lived close to her, meaning Dorothy could leave Sean with them while she worked. Dorothy was known by her co-workers as dependable and organised. Her friends and family described her as a great mum, a caring friend, and deeply committed to a Christian faith. She did not do drugs or go out drinking, preferring to stay at home, spending time with her son and going to church. On 28th of May 1980, 32-year-old Dorothy dropped off her 4-year-old son Sean off at her parents' house and went to work as usual. There was a staff meeting at Swinger's that evening at 9 p.m, so Dorothy told her parents she would be late picking up Sean. During the staff meeting, one of Dorothy's co-workers, Conrad Bostron, began to look a little off. There was a red swelling on his arm that clearly needed medical attention. So Dorothy and another colleague, Pam Head, left a meeting early to take Conrad to the hospital. Dorothy stopped by her parents' home briefly to tell them that she was taking Conrad to the hospital and did not know when exactly she would be back to pick up Sean. Dorothy, Pam and Conrad then drove to UC Irvine Medical Center. Dorothy and Pam sat in the waiting room while Conrad was treated for what turned out to be a black widow spider bite. Pam would later tell investigators that she and Dorothy had been together the whole time that Conrad was with the doctor. At 11 p.m, Conrad was treated and given a prescription, which he and Pam went to have filled. Dorothy went to the bathroom, then told the other two she would go to get the car and pull up in front of the hospital so Conrad wouldn't have to walk too far. This was the last time anyone would see Dorothy alive. Having picked up the medication, Conrad and Pam went to wait for Dorothy at the hospital entrance. It was about 20 minutes before they saw Dorothy's car, a white 1973 Toyota station wagon, coming towards them. The headlights were blindingly bright and the car did not look as though it was going to stop for them. It ended up speeding past them so quickly that they had no time to even try and glimpse who was driving. Confused and concerned by what had happened, Pam and Conrad stayed at the hospital for several hours, waiting to see if Dorothy might return for them. She never did. They called her parents from the phone in the hospital, asking if she had ever come home to pick up Sean, to which they replied she had not. Unsure of what else to do, Pam and Conrad called the police to report Dorothy missing. Given that she was an adult, they did not seem overly concerned. At 4:30 a.m. on May the 29th, about 5 hours since Dorothy had last been seen, her car was discovered in Santa Ana, about 10 miles from the UC Irvine Medical Center. The car had been set ablaze, but there was nobody inside the car. Several months before her disappearance, Dorothy had begun receiving menacing phone calls from an unknown man. While she recognized the voice, she could not place it, and it was likely an acquaintance with whom she had only exchanged a few words. What the man spoke about on the phone differed from call to call. Sometimes he would tell Dorothy how much he loved her and wanted to be with her. Other times he told her he wanted to kill her. Most chilling was that his obsession with Dorothy went beyond harassing her on the phone. He took it a step further, describing to her details about herself that only someone who was following her would know. For example, her daily routine and what she was wearing. Vera, Dorothy's mother, described one call in particular that really terrified her daughter, in which the unknown caller told her he wanted to chop her up into bits so no one would ever find her. On another occasion, the unknown caller told Dorothy to go outside as he had something for her. When Dorothy went outside, she found a single dead rose placed on the windshield of her car. The phone calls unsettled Dorothy and her family, but no one was quite sure what to do about them, so the calls went unreported. Just a week before her disappearance, Dorothy began taking karate lessons and also considered buying a gun for her own protection. It was about a week later after Dorothy's disappearance that her mother Vera received the first phone call. "Are you related to Dorothy Scott?" the voice on the phone asked. When Vera said she was, the caller simply added, "I've got her," and then hung up. It was the first such call that Dorothy's parents received, but it wouldn't be the last. Though police installed a voice recorder at their residence, they were never able to trace the calls, as the caller never stayed on the line long enough to be traced. The unknown caller would continue to call nearly every Wednesday for the next 4 years. The calls were usually short and usually occurred when Vera was home alone. Police told Dorothy's parents to keep the details surrounding the disappearance quiet. This is so when someone is brought in, they do not know all the details from reading them in the papers. So if a suspect can tell details of the crime that only the investigators know, they're likely the one who did it. Shortly after the mysterious calls began, Dorothy's father approached the Santa Ana Register, asking them to run a story about his missing daughter. The story ran on June 12, 1980, and the same day Pat Riley, the paper's editor, received an anonymous phone call from someone claiming to be Dorothy Scott's killer. "She was my love," the caller said. "I caught her cheating with another man. She denied having someone else. I killed her." The caller provided details that hadn't been included in the newspaper story, such as the colour of Dorothy's scarf and the fact that her co-worker had been treated for a black widow bite that evening. The caller also claimed that Dorothy had called him that night from the hospital, although Pam had insisted that Dorothy had never left her side that evening. As far as anyone in her life was aware, Dorothy had no serious boyfriend at the time of her death. Still, police believed that the man who called the Santa Ana Register was probably her killer. During all of this time, Dorothy was still missing. It was nearly 2 months later, on August 6, 1984, that construction workers discovered charred bones near Santa Ana Canyon Road. The bones included human and dog remains side by side. Authorities believed that they had been there for some time, as a bushfire had swept through the area in 1982 and likely explained the charred conditions of the bones. Though no cause of death was able to be established, a turquoise ring and watch were both found with the remains, and the bones were identified as Dorothy Scott's through dental records. The cause of death could never be determined. Though the strange phone calls to Dorothy's family stopped in April of 1984, they resumed after Scott's remains were found in August. In spite of the killer's taunting calls, however, Dorothy Scott's murder remains unsolved to this day. Sean's father was looked into and questioned. He had an airtight alibi. He had been in Missouri at the time and was immediately ruled out as a suspect. Dorothy's co-workers were questioned numerous times. Since Dorothy worked in a back office, she never interacted with customers, so the chances were slim that any of them were responsible either. After the news of the grim discovery made the news, Dorothy's parents received one last phone call. Is Dorothy home? As Dorothy's son Sean grew older, he became aware of a man named Mike Butler through some of Dorothy's old friends in Missouri. Mike had known Dorothy through his sister, who also worked at the Swingers Psych Shop, owned by Dorothy's father, at the time of her disappearance. And according to those who knew Dorothy, Mike had become obsessed with her. Mike Butler lived around the San Diego Mountains and was known to be very unstable and involved in cult activities. Law enforcement was well aware of him at the time, but did not have sufficient evidence to take action. Mike's sister, who has remained anonymous, is a now well-known singer throughout the Orange County and Los Angeles areas. Sean has made several attempts to speak with her, only to have her rebuff his requests. As Mike Butler's sister worked at Swingers for some time, and he knew Dorothy, there's a fair chance that he may have known Dorothy's father, Jacob, as well, or at the very least crossed his path at some point. This might explain why he stopped taunting Vera, as he may have feared that Jacob might recognise his voice. Mike Butler passed away due to health complications in 2014.
Thank you for that reading today. That was very different from the usual stuff that we actually cover. Is that the first missing case one, really, that we've done? We've done one similar before, haven't we?
We did the Somerton man, who was a man that no one knew who he was, found on a beach.
Yeah.
But not really a missing person.
But this one, so this one's to do with someone actually being killed. Now, it was interesting listening to it because there was a few bits that had me really thinking about what possibly could have happened. Because your mind, I mean, some of them you answered as you was reading it. So when I was thinking about it, you'd read ahead. And you, for example, I was thinking when you were reading the actual story that you wrote on it, that maybe the body was never found, but then you clearly said the body was found. So
yeah.
So I was thinking at the time, you know, this person who had, from what we know of, that had kidnapped her and was ringing, clearly it was a stalker. I mean, it's obvious that he was stalking her prior to this. They knew about that, didn't they? Vera, her mum, was saying that as well, that she was getting phone calls, wasn't she? Her daughter was getting phone calls.
Yeah, the daughter was getting phone calls, and then after she disappeared and her body was found, then the caller was ringing her mum, specifically her mum.
It makes me think, and I was thinking this during it, do you think that there could have been a grudge against her mum? And this was done just to maybe, even though the body, obviously, the body was found. Now, was there a suggestion to how long the body was there for? Could they figure that out?
No, because there was a bushfire straight after a few months, they think.
A few months after the kidnapping?
I think, let me just find. 2 months later, the body was found.
So this is 2 months after the kidnapping?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, 2 months after the
she went
bushfire?
No, 2 months after she went missing. So the bushfire must have occurred in that 2 months.
So 2 months after she got missing, but the stalker was calling for 4 years.
Yeah, he carried on calling.
All right, so it started calling originally, and then continued to call after that. Okay, that makes more sense. All right, that makes sense to me now. It's really odd, because he carried on calling after the body had been found as well. And one bit you said was he seemed to call more often when Vera was home alone.
Yeah, he didn't seem to. They think that he didn't seem to want to speak to her dad. And this is where it kind of ties in with if his sister worked at Mike Butler, who they think it may be. Sister worked with Dorothy, and then the shop where Dorothy worked was owned by her dad.
Yeah.
So if he's been visiting his sister there,
right,
it's likely that the dad, Jacob, Dorothy's dad, would know him. So if he heard his voice on the phone, Vera hadn't met him.
But would they not have had recording facilities in 1980 to have recorded that?
I have no idea.
1980s, and they definitely maybe had recording they didn't stuff have prior.
Recording things at their house. I don't know.
But you would have thought the police would have put that in, right?
Well, they didn't seem to have, as far as I know.
And if he was contacting when Vera was home, then clearly he knew the routines of when father was leaving, right?
And it also, I don't know, see, they didn't really investigate Mike Butler that much because they said there wasn't lots of evidence, which I guess is the point you're making. There isn't actually that much evidence linking him to it. It just seems that when Sean, Dorothy's son, when he grew up and he looked into it, obviously trying to find out what happened to his mum, that this man's name kept popping up and there is a loose link with him knowing Dorothy through the shop. And it kind of makes sense because she said she recognised the voice, but she couldn't place who it was. Mm-hmm. So had it been someone you've just seen a couple of times...
Mm.
You might not actually place them. I presume, to be honest,
I think people are on the phone when you hear them sound different anyway to how they do in real. Yeah. I think there's a clear difference.
And I think what you got to remember, this is 1980, so there wasn't lots of mobile phones.
No.
For example, like when Dorothy went missing, they didn't report her missing for 4 or 5 hours, and then they had to use the hospital phone.
It was probably normal in that time, though. I mean, she was an adult anyway, so that partly against, you know, the laws would be different to when you can say someone's missing. Normally, if they're an adult, I know from nowadays, they'll wait a good few days before they make that decision. And like you said, it was probably usual in that period. I'm thinking back going when I'm younger in the 90s, you could be out as a child playing for 6-7 hours of the day. No one would check on you.
Where you are,
You know, no one would check on you. Now, it's interesting that you mentioned partly about the cult, because there's been quite a few hostage-related situations in the past of children being kidnapped by different people of cults who go away and
keep them separate.
Some famous cases. I forget the name of the young girl, Casey something, was it? I have it in my mind. It was Casey something her name was, and she was definitely... It was very famous. She'd got taken from her own bedroom, though.
Wow.
And I think pretty sure she got taken from her bedroom and they'd kept her there for ages. It was a man and he was a bit mentally ill, the man was. Sound like this man had a bit of issues as well from what they're saying, but obviously he's not been proven to be the killer. Now, I would imagine this is a cold case then, and at some point they might reopen the case and...
It's been a long time now. You're talking 40 years, man.
They still open cold cases after that period of time. Oh. They're just many...
I suppose if more evidence comes about and then...
It's not the fact of more evidence. It's more the fact that if they had evidence kept and they still can use evidence, they can recheck records a bit better.
But see, I don't think that there was anything because...
No fingerprints, nothing.
Apart from her car, which was then burnt, so all the evidence is gone.
There would have been no cameras on the road.
No cameras,
at that time.
No like mobile phones to trace. The only thing they have is the tracing the calls that he rang
and the people
to the
that
house,
see,
but they couldn't trace it. It wasn't long enough.
And the people at the hospital, the friends that saw the car go past with the man in it,
they couldn't see who was in it because it went by so fast and the headlights were blinding. So they don't actually know who was driving the car. They didn't see a man. They didn't see anyone.
Mm.
So they assumed it was Dorothy at first. That she just left them.
It does sound like a stalker, doesn't it?
I think it's, a good time to kill somebody. You know, it's not a nice thing to say, but without all the CCTV and things like that, it was a lot easier I think.
We always say that, don't we? If you look at a lot of the serial killers, most of them happen. A lot of the serial killing that happened were... I can't think of a more recent serial killer. You get the Yorkshire Ripper.
Mm.
BTK was more recent, I think, but BTK as well, because he had the... we did that episode on BTK, Strangler, but he basically was the ADT alarm man, so he knew the alarm codes systems. And he knew the systems. But if you look at a lot of the serial killers, they seem to be in areas where there's less likely to be cameras. Now, I don't know about America. Because in the UK, we're so small, you could just go up and down the road and be caught by multiple cameras. What are the chances that you are going across state lines or going to, you know, on certain routes where they're not going to be dotted cameras everywhere?
I assume not.
Because it's too expensive.
Yeah.
They can't manage that level of security, you know. They can get stuff on probably Google Images or if they're looking at the time. But that's, you know, from a satellite, but they're not going to do that. Well, you're not going to do that for every single person, are you?
No. So, no, and if you have no clue who you're looking for, that kind of makes it harder as well. I think the sad thing with this is that her parents died and they didn't obviously know who killed her daughter.
Mm.
And she didn't, you know, she seemed like a nice person who got on well with people in the community, so they didn't think it was anything like untowards.
So the person that was ringing prior.
Yeah.
Compared with... after the death, it was the same voice. Are we assuming?
It was the same caller.
And how certain are they that the person that calling was the killer?
He knew details. He knew what color.
Right.
Like he knew what scarf she was wearing. He knew that she'd been at the hospital with a colleague.
No, but that doesn't suggest that he'd have to know evidence about. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, but he knew what she was wearing when she died.
But he could still just be the stalker. Doesn't mean he killed her.
Yeah, I suppose that he could still be the stalker, but the police thought that's
the assumption.
It's going to be him. Because he's saying things like he wants to kill her and I've got her. But, well,
I know it sounds stupid when you say that,
it's not 100%, is it? But it's most likely that it's him. What's the likelihood that you're going to have a stalker and a killer?
I don't know. But you know, I don't know.
They don't know. That's the thing. They don't know. Right. And the closest thing they have is this man called Mike Butler, who's actually died.
Well, the closest thing they got is also the sister who doesn't want to speak about it.
I think the reason she doesn't want to speak about it is because she's quite a famous singer, apparently. You can find her name on the internet now, but I didn't put it in because she wanted to remain anonymous.
Yeah.
Who just doesn't want to talk about it. Maybe she just doesn't want to be associated with the possibility that her brother may have killed.
And it could be damaging to her career, really, isn't it? If she had nothing to do with it. I mean, if you were out killing people, I don't want people to know.
You're not that you're famous anyway, so it's not like it's going to affect your life that much.
Podcast might become more famous.
Maybe, yeah. True insights from Killer Shabs.
Yeah.
But no, I just like this case because it's quite a mysterious one. Like, they don't seem to have any other leads.
Right.
It could be a case of one where the killer just got away with it.
You know, more than anything, it's just really sad. There's no closure, is there?
No.
It's really sad.
And because it was so long ago, there isn't actually... there's lots of books on it, which, you know, people used to read books in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
It's covered in some podcasts and unsolved sort of crime documentaries.
Yeah.
But there's... a lot of newspapers actually at the time had articles about it. But there isn't actually that many films or any documentaries about it, which I've found.
Probably because it has no closure. How many films you have that... Yeah. It's not. I mean, you're getting films nowadays more so that have closure to... Don't have closure to them.
Yeah.
But people don't like that.
I think it's just one of those cases, and there's probably hundreds of them out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, they are. If you look at Cold Case... I watch a lot of the cold case files on TV, and a lot of them. I think I'm not gonna lie. I can't remember the exact facts, but they said something like there's 100. I think there's 150,000 at any one point are cold cases out there, and only 1% of them get solved and they're reopened.
Wow.
I'm sure it's something like that.
Wow.
And it's scary.
I imagine if it happened now, if like the technology is better and they could just trace the person, like that's all it would have taken.
But it all depends on evidence, doesn't it? If they've got enough evidence, like records of evidence found that was, and it has to be maintained properly so that it doesn't degrade over time either, then they can follow up and they can be quite lucky if they even look so, because the people that you're interviewing, their memories are going to be different over
now,
time.
Yeah.
Compared to then.
The thing, I'm not trying to just say it is Mike Butler. Like, I don't have any personal reason to think it's him. But when I was researching around it, the fact that she was found with dog remains, and I don't think she owned a dog, seemed to be something that came up. Like, why were her bones buried right next to a dog? And I think the fact that Mike Butler was associated with cults and sort of like ritualistic killings, I think that's where they kind of thought maybe it was him as well, because there's like an animal sacrifice buried with her.
A lot of it's hearsay though, isn't it? Well, it could have been a dog dead.
No, it could be, but I think it was right next to her. It's all very loose evidence though, isn't it? And obviously people who knew Mike Butler said, that is all like circumstantial evidence, and only because he was in a cult doesn't mean he was going around killing people, which is a fair point. But I don't know if there ever. I'll keep an eye on it, and if there's any other suspects, I'll mention them in further podcasts. You never know; something might come up.
Absolutely, you don't. It's just interesting though, isn't it? This one really makes you really think a lot about, you know, all the possibilities that could have happened. And but like you say, it's interesting that the theory behind him not the killer, if it was a killer, not ringing when dad was there, because there may have been a connection there.
Which makes you think as well that he knew very intimately about their details of their life. How would he know that the dad's not there? Again, if his sister works at that place. Then you know
again,
when she's there.
Again, we're assuming
killer. But this is kind of the loose sort of connections.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really sad because her son's now obviously probably in his 30s, 30s, I think. If he was 4 in 1982,
sad thing
how
to
old
grow.
Is he now? 40s.
Yeah, he's.
And he's trying to find out what happened to his mum.
It's really sad.
Yeah. But like most other cases, they always look at the partner or ex-partner first. So they looked into his dad first, and
that's pretty standard procedure, because I think the highest percentage of person it's likely to be is the spouse.
Someone you know.
Yeah, or someone you know. So
watch
it's not
back.
Likely not. that was a very, very good episode.
Thank you.
It was very interesting. So we're going to probably leave you there on that one. If you do, obviously, carry on following us now. Hopefully, we'll start updating. Again, go back to the usual. We don't know what's happening with this pandemic. Lockdowns are killing us at the moment, to be honest. And there's likely to be localised lockdowns.
The localised lockdowns have started now here in England and Spain as well.
Yeah, see, I read that. So,
But actually, because now we have a little bit more time, we've kind of had some demons in our life. I've been watching Buffy and we've been watching Charmed. So we're getting our demon
the supernatural
fix.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of the crime stuff again. I'm going over some of the crime files and stuff. Just getting that time to obviously start watching some stuff as well, you know, again. So hopefully, you know, going forward, we will be updating more often.
Regularly, yeah.
Back to the usual, to be honest. I think it's a very strange scenario when it's affected, I guess, all of yous. In a really bad way. I'm hoping not so bad, but it's been different, hasn't it?
I have a question for you just before we go, Sheddy. Like, do you think the rates of serial killers have increased or decreased in the pandemic?
decreased.
Just because there's
because
people not
people
around.
Not going out.
People could be getting murdered.
Domestic
at home.
Violence increase has increased.
Yeah,
so there's lots of issues with them, and that's. I can understand why it's increased. I don't...
Because you're in close proximity and...
Of course you are. I'm not saying that it's a good thing at all. It's been bad news, certainly for a lot of children who suffer from domestic violence in their household. And it's horrible because the number of instances have definitely risen. Also, there was a concern before the pandemic and I was having a read and it was really, really sad. But it said, imagine how people... who are in a abusive relationship how would they feel? Because now they're in a situation where they're not actually safe in the home, in the home, you know, in the house.
Yeah, exactly.
Not even outside. So I know there was a few helplines that came up for that. And it's really sad if it's the case. And if it is the case, you know, it has to be reported, hasn't it? So, you know, wherever you are in the world, it has to be reported to your local line. And that's something you need to do. But it's really sad in the way that them domestic violence cases have risen. So when you say about serial killers, a very different matter than the violence in
homes,
which is sad.
But hopefully now with it easing down, people might find it a bit easier if they're in that situation. Okay, so thanks for listening.
Yeah, and if you want to follow us, you can follow us on TBT Pod. That's through iTunes directly. We are on Stitcher. We're on Google Play now as well, on Spotify. There's quite a few places you can actually follow us. I think that's where we get most of our following, is through them channels anyhow. You can hear us directly on the desktop iTunes as well.
Yeah, if you like us, please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. That's the best place.
It is, definitely.
Be reviewed, definitely. So more people can hear about us.
Yeah, most definitely. And I will leave you there. I'm Sheddy.
I'm Shabs.
Ciao for now.
Bye.